You are now listening to the Sports Life Talk podcast, hosted by Kevin Tumnus and Serge Vasudevic, where life without sports is just talk, on blogtalkradio.com.
Welcome to episode 7 of Sports Life Talk, where life without sports is just talk. I'm KT with my man Serge. Serge, what's up, man?
Nothing much, man. Just 2 weeks in a row of not being sick. So after being sick for 2 weeks and now not being sick for 2 weeks, it feels so much better, man. Life is like a whole new deal right now.
Hey, but just wait, man. This is Texas, so it's all sunny right now. You know, in a couple of days, it'll probably be cold again.
Yeah, and we'll that's true. You're right about that.
We're back to the drawing board as far as being sick. So we're going to move right in. And before we get started, we're going to touch on a serious subject. And if you've been under a rock, unless you've been under a rock, you've heard about this, the whole scandal going on at Michigan State. And Serge, while I was on Twitter, it was a man by the name of Timothy Burke. He had a verified account, and I love the tweet that he sent out. He said, things the NCAA did in 2010 instead of investigating Michigan State after finding out about 37 alleged sexual assaults by athletes, they vacated USC's national title for Reggie Bush, they suspended Ohio State University kids for the tattoos, and they also vacated 12 Florida State wins for academic fraud. Now, Serge, as far as Michigan State, there's been a mishandling of cases against athletes who have committed violent crimes against women. So you want to touch on that a little bit?
Man, it's almost like, where do you even get started with this kind of stuff? And then just kind of looking at some of the other sanctions that have been handed out or things that have happened previously with other, Division I colleges, vacating the title from USC and things like that. It just, the crime is, it's not even in the same ballpark. It's not even in the same chapter. And I just think that, this is probably something that obviously goes on, even it says, 2010, but I'm pretty sure this was going on even long before that. And then this is probably also something that goes on in various other, schools and organizations. It's just a matter of, I'm sure there's a lot of money that's also a factor, people getting paid off to, keep quiet. But it's just unfortunate, man, because, even if it's just only reported as 37 alleged sexual assaults, I'm sure there's a lot more people are just being quiet about it. But if we even just take that 37, it's not only, the crime and the violence that, these women have to face, but then it's also trying their best to live a normal life every day after that. We're talking about women that are obviously anywhere between 17 and 21, maybe 22 years old, who have their whole life and career ahead of them. But because of just one incident, by a football player or basketball player or, an athlete that also goes to the same university, their lives are never the same. And it's a traumatic experience. For the ones that have a good foundation and a good core group of people that are around them, or support system, it's a lot, it's a little bit easier for them to maybe get the help that they need to kind of get through that. But more often than not, in the day and age we live in, man, most of these people don't have the support system or they're too afraid to even talk about it, whether it's even to their own parents or even their own closest friends. And then you start wondering, like, why is this person acting differently? But because they're just so scared and ashamed and then some of them, commit suicide. Some of them start doing things that they're normally not used to doing, drugs and, just living their life completely different because of something that they didn't want any part of. But they were just in, unfortunately, I guess at the wrong place at the wrong time or in the wrong university.
Yeah, but Serge, let me ask you this. Why is it that nowadays we take winning over everything, even if it affects our women? the women that are in our lives.
Yeah.
And I know that these coaches, they have daughters, but you're allowing that culture in your organization. Why is that?
I just think that, you know, when it comes down to stuff like that, it's always going to come down to the bottom line, because winning equals money. And regardless for a coach, you know, there's contracts, and, you know, if they get to 10 wins in a season, you get like this extra X amount of bonus. If you make it to a bowl game, you get X amount of bonus. If you actually win that bowl game, you get X amount of bonus. If you actually make it to the national championship game and win or lose, you get a bonus, you know, and it's just, they are willing to look past, you know, all of these other things, because at the end of the day, it's like, well, yeah, I'm overseeing the program, but this is not directly impacting me. I mean, my job is to coach the players on the field. I don't care about what happens off the field. You know what, the grades, misconduct, sexual violence, you know, getting a traffic ticket, drinking and driving, whatever it is, you know, I'm a head coach. I'm not the dean of the school. You know, I'm not, you know, law enforcement. So they just look at it as like, you know, turn the other cheek and you look the other way, unfortunately. But these guys have to be held accountable. And I think if you don't put some kind of ultimate punishment, that in the event that you ever get caught, that it's an automatic, you know, you get fired on the spot, and you could never ever have a coaching job in any university or college, is probably the only way that you can put some fear into these people to where they'll think twice about letting things go and actually tackle the situation when it happens, and then, you know, take the precautionary measures and do the right thing. And look, like you mentioned, you know, look at the fact that, hey, some of these guys do have their own daughters. Like, put yourself in that shoe. Like, what if this happened to your daughter, you know? And then it's just antagonizing, man. Like, it's just frustrating just to have to hear stuff like this. It's like, it just seems like every couple of years, ESPN has to send Outside the Lines to do an investigation on something that they're not completely sure of. So let's, you know, send out these people. But, you know, why isn't this being done by other people? Because, you know, people aren't actually obviously talking about it and are just hiding it. I mean, reports that are being deleted, reports not even being typed up because they just wanted to have no record of it. It's just crazy, man.
And that's why I praise Charlie Strong for what he tried to do at Texas. Mm-hmm. He was trying to clear it out, clean it out. He didn't want this on him. If I'm not mistaken, I think he has a son and a daughter. Mm-hmm. And he probably had that in the back of his mind where, I want to win with the right guys. And I'm all about that. I've said in the past podcast that you need some knuckleheads, but I don't mean knuckleheads that are going out there and violating women. I mean,
you're talking about knuckleheads on the court, on the field.
Yes.
That just will, you know, stir things up a little bit, have a little, you know, trash talking in them, or get a technical foul because that's just who they are, or, you know, they might.
They bring the tough, it's like a Charles Oakley, a Vernon Maxwell. Those are the knuckleheads I'm talking about.
Right.
Guys that you can trust when they're out in public, not the ones that.
Everything that relates to sports is within sports. When you go stuff like this, this has nothing to do with sports, you know. And the only reason with, you know, has to do with sports is because you're part of a program, and coaches and you know, athletic directors are hiding information and not releasing information or not handling situations properly because, well, that girl who's, you know, filing a sexual assault case, she's just a random student that's on campus. Like, I don't care. I'm worried about my football player. I'm not, you know, some of them are good enough to care if they get a degree, but no. What are you doing for me on the field? What are you doing for me on the court? That's what they care about. And, you know, unfortunately, this is just like an ongoing thing. And like I said, I know this happens with other universities. And crimes like these have to be dealt with, and a way bigger punishment has to be set. And that's the only way to get these guys to be scared, so that in the future, coaches and athletic directors know, hey, if we ever get caught, that's an automatic fireable offense, possible jail time, and I can never get a job again as whatever the position I held. And if you don't do something like that, this is going to be something that we keep hearing from, you know, it might be another school, you know, next year, and then an investigation comes out, or allegation comes out. It's like, and only sometimes when an allegation comes out does it make you really want to look into that school. It could be just one athlete doing something wrong, but then that makes you start going and questioning, and then you start talking to people on campus. Oh, this kind of stuff happens all the time. This has been happening for years. And it's just like, what? What do you mean this has been happening for years? How come we don't know about it? Then you start digging and you start, you know, doing the research. And you're just like, whoa, like this is something that continuously has been going on. People get away with it, man. And that, you know, and I like to think, you know, for future reference, you know, if I end up, you know, God willing, having a daughter and, you know, she's 18 and goes off to school that I'm not even around her. And a student athlete, you know, a football player, basketball player, you know, is out at a party or, you know, just on campus, or whatever. And like something like this happens, like, you know, it's just a scary proposition to think, because it's a continuous ongoing problem that we have in this country. And, you know, we all got to work together to figure out a solution for it.
And I want to end this with a Tupac quote from the Keep Your Head Up song. And since we all came from a woman, got our name from a woman and our game from a woman, I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women. Do we actually hate our women? That's something to think about. And we're going
to
move
Amen
on.
To that.
We're going to move on to something else. We're going to talk about last week. We talked about our top 10.
Yep.
We had a couple of the same, probably like two that weren't there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a future top 10. Will Curry and Durant move into your top 10 of all time if they win maybe two or three more championships, or even one more championship?
If they win one more championship, I do not think either one of them will crack my top 10. If they win two more championships, I think I could possibly see Durant being in my top 10. I still don't see Curry being my top 10. And the reason I say that is because if you look at it, let's just say hypothetically they win this season. That means, Curry would have won this season, last season, the year before they made it to the final, the year before they won. And the year before is when he really got his career really going, where, you know, he is kind of like the player that he was then. He is now, and obviously he's better now. I think in order to crack the top 10, you have to have a pretty lengthy longevity of being great. And I know that he'll, if he ends up winning this year and next year, he'll basically have four championships, but his tenure of being great in the league is still only a 5-year, 6-year window. And I think if you don't have at least an 8 to 10 year window of continuous greatness, unless you were winning a championship every season, I just don't see how I could put that person in the top 10. But in Kevin Durant's case, he's been great since the day he stepped onto the court in the NBA. And even though, yes, he had to go join up and team up with, you know, the greatest team, great regular season team
ever
in history, and join basically three other All-Stars, he could potentially be in my top 10. But it would just really depend on how things play out, like how well did he play in the playoffs, in the finals, for those two championships that he does win.
Well, let me ask you this about Curry. He already the best shooter we've ever seen in the league, correct?
Hands down.
Also, if he wins one this year, he had the same amount as LeBron, right?
Yes.
And do you see Curry winning another championship before LeBron?
That's a very good possibility, as long as that team stays together. It's a very high possibility.
So the reason why it's hard for me to put either one of those guys, even though Kevin Durant's going to go down as an all-time great player, and eventually I'll probably change my mind, it's just a sucker move that he pulled, man, when he went to Golden State.
You had four Hall of Famers on your team. All those four guys are eventually going to be in the Hall of Fame.
And they're going to be in the All-Star game every year. And you had those guys 3-1, and you run straight to them once the season's over.
Right.
That just says something about your competitiveness, especially in, 2011, when he was talking bad about LeBron.
Right.
He said, what about the competition?
Yeah.
Well, Kevin, what about the competition? There is no competition for you.
Right.
But off the mic, you and I came up with my brother-in-law, he came up with it. I give him, Ronnie, give him credit. I think we all agree that the best team for LeBron to leave and go join in order to beat Golden State would be the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, Pelicans. I think, keeping all the team the team that they have, obviously minus probably Jrue Holiday because of the contract that he's making, they would have to cut ties with him to bring LeBron in. But, I mean, if you put Boogie Cousins, Anthony Davis, and LeBron on the same court, I mean, and that's one thing that he's never had is being able to have
true bigs.
One big man. Now you get two, and two of their guys. I mean, Anthony Davis is young enough to where he still might not have hit his prime yet.
And that's
Boogie's
scary.
In his prime.
Yes.
And, you know what I mean? And so, and that would mean LeBron, unlike in Cleveland, because of the size that these guys are at, he doesn't have to do a lot of the workload when it comes to scoring. He can let those guys dump it down to Boogie, dump it down to Davis. He doesn't have to play 38 to 40 minutes a game. And he could really facilitate. I mean, you could probably see him getting a lot more easy triple doubles that way, and get, you know, 18 to 20 points a game, but get your 10 rebounds, your 12 assists, because, man, like, you get a stop and Anthony Davis is leaking down the court. Just throw it. I mean, he's going to go lay
and,
it up.
And you have bigs that can shoot the outside jumper.
Yeah.
Now, on top of that, not only do I want LeBron to go there, I want Chris Paul to go back home to the team that he started with. Could you imagine that four would be
unstoppable.
Because Kevin Durant's going to have to guard one of those bigs.
Yeah. And he ain't doing that.
Let's see how good.
Yeah. So Draymond Green going to have to guard him too. So
our new hashtag is LeBron to New Orleans.
LeBron to New Orleans.
Along with Chris Paul.
Yeah.
All right. So since we're talking about Boogie Cousins, let's go ahead and talk about him again. If you don't know, man, he went down with an injury. He's out for the season.
Torn Achilles.
Yes, and this is his contract year. So, Serge, my question to you.
I'm Zach Lowe, and here are some things I like and don't like this week in the association.
Sorry about that. Should teams still want to get down with the Boogie?
Absolutely. If that injury is, I think, a lot more significant to people when it's probably a little later in their career, but he's still young enough. He's big, but he doesn't rely on his athleticism in his game to be as good as he is. He's very skilled, moves his feet. Obviously, he can shoot the three, he can post up, but he can take almost anybody off the dribble. And I think even though it is a severe Achilles tear, similar to what Kobe had, way, way later. So it doesn't matter if it's the Pelicans re-signing him or if he, for some reason, decides to go somewhere else. Yes, he's still in the middle of his prime. I would definitely get down with the Boogie. And the Boogie should stay in NOLA. And regardless if LeBron comes or not, he should still stay in NOLA, because I think you were starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel with those guys playing together. They were figuring it out. I mean, these guys are both dropping 25 and 12 a game. I mean, he just dropped 44, 24, and 10, like 4 or 5 games ago? I mean, that hasn't been done in like almost 50 years. Like, Will Chamberlain, I think, was the last guy, or Kareem was the last guy to do that. I mean, it's the types of numbers that he was putting up. I mean, it's just sad because, you know, it was going to be great to see. Even if, forget the All-Star game, I was just looking forward to see when they make the playoffs, you know, who do they play? Do they play the Warriors or the Rockets? And it would have been really cool to see, like, when the game slows down, who can really stop both of these guys? And I don't think there's a team out there that can stop both of these guys. You can, you know, only hope to contain them, I guess.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting down with the Boogie, because you can keep him and Davis together. And that's the thing. That's another question I have for you, Serge. If you decide that you don't want to keep Boogie, would you trade Anthony Davis?
This is something immediately once he went down. I saw the injury probably within like 15, 20 minutes of it happening as I was watching NBA TV. I don't know. It's almost like, okay, do you just ride out the season and you know for sure you're going to want to keep him and you have a direction that you want to go next year? Or, man, we might just need to hit the restart button because, like, we're going to have to try that much harder. Anthony Davis is going to have to carry that much more load just to try to make the playoffs. And then even if we make the playoffs, okay, we're probably going to get bounced in the first round. We're going to play the Rockets. We're going to play the Warriors, and we're probably going to get bounced in the first round because I don't see them getting anywhere higher than a 7th or 8th seed, even if they do make it. You know, obviously, if you're the Pelicans, you probably don't trade him, but if the right offer is on the table that you can look, you know, 4, 5, 6 years into the future, and it just makes more sense for you to do that, you know, I might really have to take into consideration. And if I was another team, this is the prime opportunity if you want to go get Anthony Davis. And me, I've been thinking about it the last 24 hours. The Celtics should do it.
They got to. That's what I was going to say.
Do it right now. Go for the kill. You got Cleveland, you know, reeling a little bit. You don't even need Gordon Hayward this year. You go, yeah, I know you would have to give up I'd give up Jason Tatum because they're going to want us. They're going to want a player that's already, you know, proving himself, or we know in like 4 or 5 years he's going to be a perennial all-star.
Well, you know what, sir? I don't think – now that you said that, I don't think I want to get rid of Jaylen Brown or Tatum.
No, but the thing is the Pelicans have to get one of those players.
Yeah, no, I get that. But guess what? If I'm Boston, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to get down to Boogie. I'll just wait till after the season, let him get healthy. Hey, bring him in. You have to give up any pieces.
Sure.
But, yeah, it would be hard for me to give up one of those young talents. But I get what you're saying.
But the difference is the Pelicans can offer more money in that 5th year as opposed to any other team can only offer the 4 years.
I guess that goes if he wants
kind of like Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, if he wants to win a championship or he wants money.
Right.
Because he'll be the best – he'll be the missing piece for Boston. You can put Al Horford at the 4.
Yep.
Boogie's at the 5. And then Hayward comes back. Oh man!
I mean, I honestly, I would really consider, because if I trade Anthony Davis, he's already signed up for the next 3 or 4 more years already. So that means I would trade Al Horford, Jason Tatum, and a pick and get Anthony Davis this season, because I'm still gonna probably end up being in the same location by the end of the season, whether I compete with the Cavs and beat them or I don't think they would have enough to beat the Warriors this season. But if you get Anthony Davis, now you bring Gordon Hayward back next season, you're going to have a starting lineup of Kyrie, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, Anthony Davis, and you're still going to have a top premier pick that's coming up draft 2. He's got another 6 draft picks that he can trade. I just wouldn't trade the one that I could get as a number 1 or a top 3 pick next season. Trade 2 other ones. Trade 2 second rounders. Trade Jason Tatum and Al Horford. I mean, I would do it right now just because the way that the Cavs are reeling, and if Isaiah Thomas doesn't get as healthy as he needs to be, or they end up making a crazy trade and it doesn't work out regardless of who it is, I mean, you might already – I mean, shoot, that game last night was –
I was going to talk about that. Like, from that game last night, Boston is our best chance out of the East.
Yeah.
To give Golden State any kind of – yeah,
without anything, right?
So, yes.
I mean, if I was Danny Ainge, I'm going for the juggernaut kill right now, because what I could potentially also do by making that move is basically make LeBron leave Cleveland. Like, he's going
to – Yeah, we're going to run his ass right out of the East. Yeah. I'm with you.
You know,
Serge, you got me sold now.
I just don't see why not, man. You got to go for it, and it would be great for the league to kind of get a little bit more of like, oh, there's another team, not just Cleveland and Golden State, or maybe a Houston kind of like there'll be the Houston of the East, like they're right there, and they have now gathered the talent to potentially compete with the best team in that conference, and then potentially, because all it takes is one injury. Like, if Klay Thompson, for some reason, or Draymond Green gets hurt on the Warriors, it's going to be that much harder for them to make the final. Do I think they'll make it? They'll probably make it, but it's going to be hard for them to beat whoever comes out of the East, you know? So, you have to think, like, you know, what if, like, we got to go for it right now. Just, like, stop waiting, and we're still going to have 4 or 5 prime years of Anthony Davis, 4 or 5 prime years of you know, Gordon Hayward, 4 or 5 prime years of Kyrie Irving. I mean, you cannot beat that. You just can't do it.
Well, let me ask you this, Serge. We're going to move on to our next topic. When's the last time you just sat down and just had to pat yourself on the back? When's the last time you did that, man?
Pat myself on the back? Probably when I got married, I probably would say I did good with picking the right woman to be married to. But about 10 months ago.
All right, so let's talk about LeBron giving himself a pat on the back.
Yeah.
Before he reached his 30,000-point milestone, he sent an Instagram post about, hey, this young kid, blase, take time to reflect, all of this and that. So how do you feel about LeBron and his self-praising?
The self-praising, I was very caught off guard by this. I was like, really? I mean, what if something happens? What if you go into the game and then...
Yeah, he would have got hurt.
He would have got hurt before he scored the 7 points. He got two quick tees because the referee was like, nah, I don't want to see you do it out here. Or what if you got, you know, rolled an ankle during warm-ups and you couldn't play, you know? So that's a thought that I went through. But on the flip side to it, the actual message, and, you know, he talked about it after the game was, you know, he doesn't ever really, really, like, you know, really understand. I mean, he understands what he's doing, but I don't think he obviously sits there and celebrates like, oh, my gosh, I hit this, I got that, outside of winning the championships. Like, man, like, you're going to appreciate the journey, because a lot of times you'll talk about a lot of athletes who have especially won championships and stuff, and they try to pass down the message like, man, enjoy it while it lasts because it won't last too long. You know, enjoy the journey and enjoy the process. You know, even Kobe even talked about it in his retirement thing, like, enjoy it because you just never know when it can get taken away from you. And then also you learn to appreciate all those, going extra hard in practice, or the waking up super, you know, 5 a.m. and, you know, but still shooting around at midnight because you're trying to get extra shots up because, you know, that's how great you want to be.
But my thing is,
I was okay with it after a while thinking about it. But initially, I was just like, I mean, why wouldn't you just wait till after the game?
Yeah,
it's the same thing, but just do it after the game.
Yeah, just save that post, man. You didn't have to do it then. It's just, it came out the wrong way. Even when I saw it, I didn't really have a problem with him. I'm like, LeBron, you're so much better than that. Let somebody else send that out.
Yeah.
Not you. Well, let's talk about something that LeBron did get right, and that's him. Is a starter for the All-Star team. I mean, because I don't know what Curry was thinking. All right, so LeBron, his team consists of DeMarcus Cousins, who's being replaced by Paul George since he got hurt, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, LaMarcus Aldridge, Bradley Beal, Kevin Love, Victor Oladipo, Porzingis, John Wall, and Russell Westbrook. Now, I'm trying to pull up Curry's, but off the top, it was what? Harden.
Greek Freak.
Draymond.
Klay Thompson.
Damian Lillard.
Joel Embiid.
Okay, I got it.
Jimmy Butler. Karl Anthony Towns.
DeRozan. Embiid.
Kyle Lowry.
Karl Anthony Towns. Klay Thompson. So just listen to those two rosters. You already know who won that. And
yeah.
I don't know what Curry was thinking. I guess going second hurt him.
Yeah, but, I mean, this is like, you know, if it's just me and you playing fantasy football, like, we got the best pickings. But you still got to be smart about your pickings. And, you know, I mean, he has to know that LeBron was going to pick KD first. Like, so you should already know, okay, who's my first pick going to be? I know it ain't going to be KD because LeBron's already going to take it. Okay, I take the Greek Freak. Okay, well, LeBron, now he doesn't know who LeBron's going to take second. But you should know, like, well, who's the next really best available player left is, I mean, in my opinion, is Anthony Davis. So you go get Anthony Davis. I mean, it was between Anthony Davis or James Harden, and he picked Anthony Davis. But because he picked a big man, you know, you have to also coincide and pick a big man too, because you're trying to also match up, because at the end of the day, yeah, they're trying to make it more competitive. They want to win the game. Like, you know, even if I lost out on Harden as the next pick, because I would have picked Boogie. Yeah. But
you could have got Westbrook.
Yeah. eventually. But so when it goes to the reserves, Steph Curry does get the first pick. So they flip that. Okay. So he's caught in no man's land because, well, I should probably pick Westbrook. That's the best pick to pick, you know, best person to pick. But am I really not going to pick one of my own teammates, Clay Thompson and Draymond Green? If I was him, I'm like, man, I'm trying to win. Like, I'm Westbrook.
I play with you guys all the time.
Yeah.
I'm trying to win championship with you. I'm trying to, you know, win this All-Star game.
Right. And it's like, okay, let me go ahead and pick Westbrook. Let me really see if LeBron's going to go pick Clay Thompson or Draymond Green. Because there's another pool of talent that's still definitely better than Draymond Green. Do I really see him picking Clay Thompson? I mean, he may, but I want to make him pick Clay Thompson. Because I think he would have probably ended up picking up somebody else. And then I would have still had the chance to pick up Klay Thompson. But no, I pick Klay Thompson. Well, of course, LeBron's like, hey, thanks for giving me Russell Westbrook.
Hey, you worry about your friends?
Thanks for giving me last year's MVP.
And two of the best bigs in the league.
Yeah.
That's what I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know what he was thinking. And I think you could tell by look on his face when they're doing the TNT interview. He was just like,
God,
he probably looked at the screen like, it's probably weird when you're looking at it on paper, you're like, oh, man, I got a whole bunch of all-stars on my team. But then when you look up at the board, you're like, damn, look at those stars. Who's going to go? KD is their shooting guard?
Yes, he's
who's
the two.
Guard KD?
Yeah.
DeMar DeRozan or James Harden is not about to guard one of those guys.
James Harden's not going to guard anybody regardless. Yeah. So now you just put him in an awkward position.
James Harden, no D.
No D. Hey, okay, well, that makes me want to think about Curry's fantasy football lineup. Boy, he's probably terrible at that.
Come on. All right. That's horrible.
All right, speaking of teammates, let's talk about one of LeBron's teammates that he did pick in an All-Star game, and that's Kevin Love. He's been in the center of the Cavs controversy. Should he play second fiddle to Isaiah Thomas, who has been vocal about Love's performances?
Absolutely not. Kevin Love, he's, you know, this is going on his fourth year there, already won a championship. You know, was part of another, you know, obviously championship team going to the finals last year. He's already proven himself to, I mean, I still remember in game seven a couple of years ago when, you know, they were up, you know, there was a few seconds on the clock and Steph Curry's dribbling. Kevin Love is moving his feet, playing defense on Steph Curry and making take a tough contested shot. So I know Isaiah Thomas yesterday came out and said that, it was blown out of proportion. I just asked him, like, hey, like, I came, you know, to talk to you after the game, but you weren't there. Where were you? Instead of calling him and asking him where were you, you waited till you guys had a team meeting, and then you basically calling him out that, you know, you're kind of, like, finger-pointing in the sense of you don't think that he really was sick, you know? And so, you know, come on, you guys are all grown adults. I mean, like, that's my thing. You know, why he's being. And then, you know, as far as his play, like, I don't expect Isaiah Thomas to be putting up 25 points and all that right now. I know he's, you know, it's a hip injury. It's very tricky. You know, he hasn't played basketball in 7 months. He has, you know, no preseason, no training camp, no, you know, nothing like that. So, yeah, he's probably not going to be anywhere close to where he's supposed to be, probably till, like, the middle of March. I don't expect him to be anywhere close to what he was last year or the last couple of years with the Celtics. Till at least the middle of March. I mean, and the Cavs better hope that he is by then so that they can really see what the team is really going to look like. But I think, you know, kind of like he also said yesterday in the interview is every time when you're on a team with LeBron, it's like any little story becomes the biggest story in sports, regardless of what it is. And especially when they're losing, it makes it that much more. And it's all just effort. And they just don't try. They don't communicate. They'll play spurts of like 4 or 5 minutes of great basketball, and it's like they're all high-fiving, and then, like, you know, a couple of timeouts later, you're back doing the same thing. Like, what changed? And that's what I don't get. It's like they don't have a passion for wanting to play for each other, and that's what I noticed. I mean, because I pretty much try to watch all their games because, you know, at the end of the day, I'm trying to get entertained. But when you also just kind of know fundamentals of basketball and you see it, Isaiah Thomas is – he jumps all the way to shoot, and then at the last second, because he sees the defender in his face, he tries to pass it. I'm like, dude, you're 5'9". You can't be doing that.
No, you can't do that. So. And my thing with Kevin Love is, hey, I played third fiddle to Kyrie, who's a way better player than you.
Yeah.
The only second, I'm only playing second fiddle now to LeBron. IT, you haven't proven anything.
Nothing.
You're coming to our team, and you're trying to be vocal about things?
Right.
No, sit your little ass down.
Yeah.
Let me handle mine, and we can work it out. But to do the way they went about it and everything is on Kevin Love.
Right.
Tristan Thompson, he's trash.
Yeah.
He's overpaid. And we're going to dog Kevin Love, really.
And Kevin Love's been having the best season in almost in his career. I mean, definitely in Cleveland. I mean, dropping, you know, 20 and 12, and he knew that when Isaiah Thomas came back, okay, I'll probably get a little bit of less shots and all that. So Isaiah Thomas has to realize that Kevin Love is making a sacrifice to basically blend you in into the team, you know. And he already had to do that with Kyrie, who's obviously way better than you are, one on one. Period. Definitely one on, you know. Definitely, you're not even close to being one of the best one on one players, especially at your height.
No,
that doesn't, you know, not make you a great player. I think he's still a really good player, but trying to pay for a contract and for next season and things like that, I just think those type of things can't be coming out of the locker room where you're the one who's pointing the fingers. It should be LeBron pointing the finger. It could be J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson. I mean, guys that have been there with him, I can understand them saying something or being vocal. But you're new to the team, haven't even been playing, and all of a sudden you've only played like 7 or 8 or 10 games or whatever, and you can't come in there and just kind of babble your mouth about stuff like that.
Yeah, you don't have enough skins in that locker room to come in there and do all that. So slow it down a little, man. All right, speaking of being treated unfairly, let's talk about the NBA refs. Do you think that they are being treated fairly, man?
They're getting treated very unfairly. I mean, I'm one of those guys who are always for the players when it comes to their money, when it comes to, you know, getting treated properly and things like that. But, man, some of the stuff that I see, it's ridiculous. Like, I mean, I don't understand. Like, guys who foul somebody, I mean, and then when the replay comes on, it's so obvious that you hit him. But then as soon as the whistle is blown, you're like, what? What did I do? And
because you can't close your mouth. That's the problem.
So if you fouled a player and you're blatantly, you know you fouled him, like, because when you touch somebody else's body or especially their hand when they're going up for a shot, you feel it. And you're basically telling me that, like, you hit him, but I don't remember hitting him. I didn't feel like I hit him. I mean, and then when you complain to the ref that and then, you know, maybe back in the days it was a lot more difficult because there was no replay and, like, there wasn't all these instant replays to zoom in on, like, if somebody got fouled or not. But now that we get to see it, we're basically able to call out all these players, like, dude, like, this is why you get teed up. This is why they're going to keep not giving you calls, because you complain when you foul somebody and you're saying that you didn't touch them. I mean, I saw it in the game last night, you know, Kevin Durant, I think it was Jaylen Brown. He was in the middle of or by the free throw line, like, falling away. But Kevin Durant still hit his hand, fouled him, and as he fouled him, the ref calls the whistle. Kevin Durant puts both of his hands up. Now, the only reason he probably didn't argue or go forward is because he picked up his second. He didn't want to pick up his check because he's already got the most in the league, and he knows he's trying to be good. He just walked straight to the bench. But his reaction to putting his hands up in the air was like, no, don't call that, or I didn't touch him. Like, and the replay shows 3-4 times in a row. I'm like, you hit him in his hand, which is why the ball fell short of the rim. You cannot have that kind of reaction. And the refs are going to continuously be like this and behave like this towards you guys, towards these players, because they're not showing any respect. And, I mean, I don't know. Kevin Durant is getting rubbed off by Draymond Green or something. But
yeah, that
it's
dude,
just ridiculous.
Because he's changed. The one thing they can do is just go to the ref and say, hey, what did you see? What did I do?
Right.
Just go to them, have a conversation, because they are killing basketball. I have middle school kids that are going after the refs. We had a guy in our tournament. He went up to the ref and said, get out your feelings, lady. A middle school seventh grader. he really said that to one of the refs. I'm like, and she teed him up. He ended up getting thrown out the game.
Yeah.
So they're seeing that.
Yeah.
These guys are role models. I mean, set the standard for the younger players. And
yeah.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and, you know, I know in a couple of last podcasts I had brought up about having four refs and stuff like that. The fourth ref isn't there for any of this kind of crap. They're there to get more calls right.
Right, yes.
And that's it. And that's only because of the pace of the game, the space of the game is way different than it was even 10 years ago. So that's my suggestion, is for that reason and that reason only. Nothing for anything else, but this whole reason why, like, they feel like the refs don't respect us and they're just calling. Like, yeah, if you keep acting like that, you know, and it doesn't matter. And the more higher star level caliber player you are, the less complaining you should be doing when it's blatantly obvious. Hey, if you complain, you better have, you know, support, video support evidence, because we're going to be able to see that replay within 10 seconds of the call. And when we see it, we're like, it doesn't matter if I'm going for that team or if I'm going for that player or not. Don't, that makes me lose respect for you, because that's just not the way the game is meant to be played. Like, that's just not. Because if it happened to somebody else, then you also would want to get, if that call was in reverse and Kevin Durant was going up for a shot and Jaylen Brown hit him in his hand and they didn't call the foul, Kevin Durant would have complained, right?
Yes.
But you're not going to complain if Jaylen Brown, you know, did get the foul call. You would have been like, oh, I get to go two free throws.
Exactly. So we're going to move on. We're going to talk about Roger Federer. If you didn't know, he won the Australian Open, giving him his 20th Grand Slam title.
Crazy.
So, Serge, let's talk about Roger's greatness.
Roger Federer, to me, is the greatest men's tennis player, singles men's tennis player of all time, hands down. I mean, I grew up watching Pete Sampras.
Andre Agassi.
Andre Agassi. What is it? Gordon Ivanišević. I mean, Michael Chang. I mean, there's so many good to great. Boris Becker. There was some really good tennis players back.
So, in your opinion, he's past Pete Sampras.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. I think his longevity. I mean, just looking at the titles that he's won, all, you know, Wimbledon, Australian, U.S. Open. I mean, French Open. I mean he's the master of, like, he perfected his craft. But he's also kind of, you know, shifted from one era to another era and still showing, you know, his greatness. You know, he's obviously, yeah, obviously he has a share of losses to Novak Djokovic and Nadal and stuff like that. But
I remember
he beat him a lot more than they beat him.
And I remember the match where he knew he couldn't beat Nadal. And after he started crying, he said, man, I gave him my all. I couldn't beat this guy.
Yeah.
I kind of lost a little respect for him because he was crying, but he's a competitor.
Of course.
And see, I'm going to have to agree with you. 20. You're 20th and you're 36.
Yeah.
In tennis, you're a grandfather in tennis.
Yeah.
So that's why he, as well as Serena Williams, are the greatest tennis players ever.
Ever.
So,
let
me ask you this. Who would you put one and two? Would you put Serena above him, or are you putting Roger Federer above her as far as the greatest tennis players?
I would probably put Roger Federer above Serena. And that's because of the level of high-level competition. Because Djokovic, he's still super young.
He's had to go against Murray, Nadal.
I think when all their careers are done and the amount of titles all those guys got, because even when Federer came in, he had to face Sampras, like, at the latter part of Sampras. And, you know, he's lost to Sampras, but he's also beat Sampras. So if I look at those kind of things, and to see all the guys he faced and where they are up against the all-time ranking tennis players, he's faced a lot more top-tier ranked players in his prime or in his career than Serena ever did. And so because of that and that alone, I would have to give the nod to Federer. But, I mean, Serena,
Hands down, she's the best female.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
not even the best female tennis player, probably the best female athlete that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And ever will see.
Yeah, and I'm excited. You know, I think the only reason she didn't play is because, you know, I think she had just had a baby or something like that.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
And she's supposed to come back next month.
Okay.
And she'll come back dominating.
Yeah.
She's probably not going to miss a step.
You know, it's like, you know, when's the U.S. Open? Wimbledon, you know, during June. I know she's going to be the favorite. And, you know, that's definitely, you know, if we ever get to have, like, things like bucket lists on our, you know, on our podcast, man, that would definitely be one thing, is to go to Wimbledon and, you know, watch on center court, Serena play, Federer play, you know, would be, like, definitely, like, a lifetime goal to try to have, man.
You know, we're going to do that next podcast. We're going to bucket list.
Okay.
I don't care if I see Serena at a Waffle House. I want to see Serena, all right?
Yeah, I got you.
All right, let's move into our NFL talk. And if you haven't heard, there was a group of veterans who the NFL, they rejected their Super Bowl ad from the Please Stand Up Vets group. Do you think that was a good idea for the NFL? Now, I'll let you gather. I think it was. The only reason I say yes is because you want to get past all of this now.
Yeah.
We don't want to keep talking about the taking the knee and the now making people stand up. We don't want to talk about that guy in the White House talking bad about the players. I think it was a good move only in that. Now, as far as a freedom of speech, come on, NFL. You got to let people voice their opinions. But I get it. You're tired of their headache and you just want to move on. So I'll let you go ahead and go, Serge.
I'm also going to say yes. And my only reservation or hesitation is because I definitely didn't want to come off by saying no as unpatriotic.
Yes.
And because there's a fine line. But you have to understand in the day and age that we live in how every little thing is, you know, microscoped into something way bigger than it needs to be. And what this kind of stuff does is create more controversy, create more division, and still just keeps taking the narrative further and further away from what the real issue is. And for that reason, I have to say yes, because it's just a better move for the NFL. Because at the end of the day, NFL, honestly, they're just worried about themselves.
Yes, they are.
I mean, this is the biggest platform that they have. It's the Super Bowl. This is the granddaddy of them all in all sports, especially in America. And they don't want to put themselves in a position where, you know, they want people to be talking about the game and before, during, and after. You know, I am interested in to see what happens during the Super Bowl, because if either team does have any guys that, you know, decide to kneel or anything like that, I don't see anybody on the Patriots doing it. I could see some, you know, Malcolm Jenkins, you know,
Jenkins, you're right.
You know, he at least usually, even if he doesn't kneel, he usually has his fist in the air.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see if he still decides to go through with it, because, I mean, you're going to have a gazillion people watching it. And, you know, and then I know they've also had conversation in light of, you know, something similar to this is going back to how it was pre-2009, where when they do the national anthem, the players are still in the tunnel or in the back and they only come out after that.
Yeah, I think that would be the best solution.
It is, man, because this way you eliminate, like you said, the man in the White House talking about anything. The people in the stands can't say nothing. Social media can't say nothing. And, yeah, people are like, oh, look at what they did. They decided to, that doesn't, this way we just cut out the whole controversy side of it. That doesn't mean there's not an issue. We just decide to just part ways with having a controversy always being talked about. Let's just talk about the sport, what it's really meant for. The national anthem has nothing to do with the sport itself, you know, and the game, how it's played on the field. The national anthem has to do with the freedom for those guys to be able to play football. But unfortunately, when something like this happens, and then, you know, when there's equality is not happening, stuff that, like we talked about with Colin Kaepernick, and, you know, a couple of weeks ago we talked about the Rooney Rule. I mean, there's just so many different reasons why these kind of conversations keep coming up, and we need to just get away from the controversy. And I would have to, I would have to agree with you and say yes. I think it was a good idea for the NFL to do what they did.
Because all it's going to do is going to give our president more ammunition. And I guess when he gets wind of this, I'm pretty sure he'll send a text out, a tweet out about it saying, hey, that's not right.
On Super Bowl time,
freedom of speech just to take away from the glory that is the Super Bowl. And speaking of glorious, let's talk about Tom Brady. Serge, if this man wins another Super Bowl, will that make him the greatest athlete ever?
How could you really not say? I mean, ever?
It'll be 7 or 8 Super Bowls for him.
It'll be 6-2.
So he's been to his 8th Super Bowl.
8th Super Bowl. I would definitely say in the modern era, for sure, he's the greatest athlete of all time because he's playing in a way tougher sport.
And I'm not talking about physical.
Right.
I'm just talking about accomplishments, being the greatest athlete ever.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about just strictly in that sport, nothing outside of the sport, nothing outside the lines, Yeah, I would have to say yes. I would say, yeah, he would have the same number of championships as Michael Jordan would, but I feel like Michael Jordan probably, you know, it's like comparing apples and oranges. I think football is a way tougher sport, especially to last as long as he has and to still be playing in his peak, probably end up winning the MVP this season. I mean, you can't really take that away. I mean, Michael Jordan, yeah, he wasn't like, I mean, he was still a top pick, you know, one of the top picks in the league. You knew he was going to be good. Nobody probably thought he was going to be the greatest ever coming out of college, but you knew he was going to be good. But Tom Brady was, you know, pick number 199.
Like, he was in the sixth round. And did you see him run that 40?
See, people got a shirt on back then.
Oh, yeah, my just, God.
I mean, the transformation, I mean, like, to see that he wasn't even a starter. I mean, he couldn't even start, you know, in Michigan.
Yeah, he was behind. Who was he behind?
In Michigan? I honestly don't
remember. It was a guy that played for the Cowboys, wasn't it? Chad something?
Chad Henne?
No, it wasn't Chad Henne, was it?
Maybe it was Chad Henne.
Was it Chad Henne? Yeah. It probably was Chad Henne. Yeah.
And but just the fact that, I mean, he had to wait behind Drew Bledsoe to get hurt to even, you know, even get in on the Patriots. And then, you know, kind of like, you know, there's people that argue like, well, Michael Jordan had Phil Jackson. Brady had Bill Belichick.
Yes.
So it goes both ways, and it's just like, you know, there's just certain guys. It's like, okay, what would have happened if Phil Jackson or even Greg Popovich, while in their prime, was coaching LeBron? Like, how many championships would they have when you compare it to Jordan? Same thing with Tom Brady. How many championships would Peyton Manning have if Bill Belichick was the coach?
And it wasn't Chad Henne. It was Chad Henson.
Chad Henson. Okay.
Yes. Okay.
Chad Henson. Okay. Gotcha. But yeah, so I would definitely have to say, yeah, because of the magnitude of the sport and the violence that it is, I'm taking hits and having to be so precise. And you know, because at least on the basketball court, you have to share the ball. You know, there's times you're out of the game. Well, when you're on offense, Tom Brady has to be on the field.
He's a point guard. He's a point guard of the offense.
He ain't no rest time for him. And then it's just like the greatest, showing the greatest is like how many times he came behind 10 points in the game in the fourth quarter, you know, comebacks, and in the fashion that he did it in. I mean, if you thought, you know, last year's Super Bowl, you're like, oh, man, what else can he do? I don't know, lead a team to the Super Bowl again while he's 40? I mean.
And my thing is he's 40, and he may be slowing down a little bit, but I think he still has enough to go to at least two or three more Super Bowls.
Easily.
And that's the crazy thing. And we're going to talk about that later on, so stay tuned. So my question to you now, Serge, as we move on, should the Pittsburgh Steelers move on from Le'Veon Bell? The Steelers aren't happy with Bell's tardiness and may use this as a negotiation tactic. So should they sign him long term?
Absolutely, they should. If they want to keep the chance of trying at least to get to the position where the Patriots are and, you know, play them in AFC playoffs and beat them, you better have that guy on your team. I mean, he's still young. He's still in his prime of his career, especially with Antonio Brown still being there. Like, I mean, that two-headed monster is because you need to have
you need the defense to be able to respect you
to, like, okay, do we double Antonio Brown? Do we put eight in the box with Le'Veon Bell? Like, well, you pick your poison. They would be stupid not to pay the man and keep him around. Like, that would be one of the dumbest moves to not re-sign that player.
Let me ask you this, Serge. Is water wet?
Yes.
Is fire hot?
Really hot.
Is Halle Berry fine?
Super fine.
So all those are yeses, right?
Yes.
Yes, you got to bring this man back. Yeah. He is the best running back in football. Yeah. You can actually put him, along with probably Ty Gurley, in the slot as a receiver, and they're still going to dominate.
Absolutely.
You need to keep the three Bs together, Ben Roethlisberger, Brown, and Bell.
Yep.
So they'd be dumb to make any changes that – I mean, you got to pay the man.
Pay the man. I mean, you can't – because you're not going to go get somebody else off the street – or even, you know, garner somebody in a trade or pick somebody up in the offseason.
That's going to give you the same production.
Not even close, you know. I don't even think you can pick up two guys that could be complementary together that would give you what he does and puts fear in the defense. I mean, that's the main thing, you know. And the patience that he plays with and, I mean, the skills that he has, like you said, catching the ball in the backfield, blocking and running, being able to run out of the slot, you know, being a wideout, I mean, he can do it all.
So I guess, okay, we both agree that he should return. Now, I don't think we'll both agree on this, on something that's returning, and that's the XFL that's going to return in 2020. We know that Vince is the ultimate promoter. Should his first move be to sign Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel, or Colin Kaepernick?
At least one of the three.
I would say two of the three. Let's get Tebow and Manziel, because I don't think Kaepernick is going.
Yeah, I don't think Kaepernick is going to go either. And I think and Kaepernick not going, I don't think has necessarily anything to do with football. I think it has more to do with the things that he's put himself through and the, trying to make this whole movement going on and and garner all the support. I think it would, unfortunately, in the day and age we live in, like if he might just want to go play just because he wants to play football and that's what he loves. But unfortunately, because now he'll be in the limelight a little bit and, get some attention. People, this is another excuse that people get to bash him for, like, oh, you couldn't get on the NFL until you just go play in the XFL. And then it's like people have more of an excuse not to support the movement that he's actually trying to make. And I think that reason alone, I think he should probably hold off. But Johnny Manziel, for sure. Vince McMahon, I mean, he's smart. He's a genius when it comes to stuff like this. Yeah, pay the man, figure out a way. The CBA and stuff like that won't really exist in the XFL. So you can, if you want to promote him, if he wants to do his little money sign and all that stuff, he can, promote he can do all of that. You don't have to worry about the NFL and promote it the way you want to do it. I mean, at the end of the day, he's a genius when it comes to entertainment. Tim Tebow, yeah, I mean, Tim Tebow, still wants to show that, hey, I can still play, and he's willing to sacrifice a little bit of the, studio time in the booth calling games.
Yeah,
I think he should also do it. But the whole XFL thing is very interesting to see. I think it will be better than it was the first time around because, you learn from your mistakes.
And, yes.
But you kind of see where there are things that are lacking in the NFL, and I think Vince McMahon is smart enough to figure out, pick out those little areas. Okay, let me make those really standing points in my league. But then still also try to give the best product that the NFL does give, keep a lot of the same rules so that, it's going to take a little bit of time for people to get acclimated to and get used to, like, cheering for people and things like that. But, they don't need to maybe do all the extracurricular stuff that they were doing when they initially did it, sidelines and being in the huddle and all that, which I think is kind of cool. I think it's really cool, that they had those kind of extra features. But that's 2001. Look at the technology that's there now.
Yes.
So he's going to utilize all those technology aspects of it to make fundamentally sound because, he's now given a 2-year window to really, plan it out. I think he said there's going to be 8 teams, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so. But this is my thing. He's the ultimate promoter, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a promoter myself. Why don't you get a team? I don't know where they're going to be stationed. I think they've already said it. Get one in Florida. Get Tim Tebow to be there. Didn't Jerry Jones want Johnny Manziel in Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Vince, he should. Hey, Jerry, you want a Johnny Manziel, right? Can I get a team in Dallas? You don't think Jerry?
Can I use your stadium too?
Yes. You don't think Jerry will jump on that?
Heck yeah! If we get Jerry Jones, anything that brings in money, I'm on board. That's his mentality, and that's how he should be. He's a businessman.
Yeah.
And
so
and they're gonna be playing, if I'm not mistaken, when the NFL's not going on.
Yes.
Right? So. What, middle of February, end of February to pretty much August if they want? I mean, why not?
And let the NFL jump in there a little bit. So let's make it work.
Yeah. And then this is obviously going to be a showcase for guys who are like on the cusp of making it to a team or they're on their practice squad, but they're just not going to get paid. Well, go play in the XFL.
Go play in the XFL.
Go play. Get your name out there. Show your, this is kind of like, the NBA version of a G League. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
It's just like your own. It's it doesn't have a ties to the NFL, but eventually, sooner or later, it'll be, it'll have NFL ties to it. I'm interested to also see, which TV station ends up picking it up as something that they want to broadcast. And then,
I'll probably see, a network like Fox. I think Fox would do it. Not, on the Channel 4. I'm talking about, the cable channels. I see them doing it because they're the one that did the Big Three.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see them trying to jump on that and getting something going to Fox because, ESPN just – they take everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see something similar to that too. And then it's like, you know, some of the commentators that they would get, you know, would also be pretty cool. And, you know, do they have pregame shows? Where they
are probably Jim Ross. I can see him being there.
You know, do they have pregame shows on their premier night games or whatever, where they have other former players or whatever that, you know, are talking about the sport? You know, they're gonna learn from their mistakes. I mean, it's going to basically be, what, 19 years later. And I think, you know, you live and you learn. And, you know, Vince is so much more wiser now than he was back then. And that was even before he got WCW, he got ECW. That was before, you know, the Attitude Era was even finished. So I think he's only going to do great things now, and he has the help of his kids and Triple H. And, you know, and I'm sure he figures out a way to promote the XFL during Raw, during SmackDown, getting so it's not going to be hard for him to get fans. It's just, can you get them to stay, you know, every week to want to keep watching it? That's going to be the, you know, selling point.
I'm with you on that one. Hey, that was episode 7, man. Another one in the books.
In the books, yes, yes.
So we want to thank the Roberts Media Group and Blog Talk Radio for giving us this platform. We want to thank you for listening. And please tell a friend, and then have that friend tell their friend and their girlfriends, because, you know, never mind, I won't go there by gossip.
Hey, what's up right there?
Yeah, this is episode 7, where life without sports is just tough. Thank you.
All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Want a slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Yeah.